Pickaxe.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Good morning. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Triforce podcast from lovely, sunny England. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's so nice now.
It's like, raining here.
What happened to this place?
Yeah.
It's come. Oh, it's like living in a different country.
Yeah.
It smells different. The people are different.
They look different.
Like
they look different to me. They're stealing my jobs. I see where this is going.
Well, I've been enjoying this.
You're having one of those midlife crises where you're just like...
You're becoming more conservative
and more racist.
It's the mid-year crisis where I'm like, why is it not like this... the whole year round. Like, I've been sitting in the park.
Yeah.
I've been reading my book.
Right.
It has been beautiful.
Drinking fruity cider outside of pubs.
Just to reiterate, it is currently raining here, so I can't really join in with
Oh, don't worry. It'll get... We had that little bit of rain.
Yeah.
It blew past us in 20 minutes.
It's light, but I'm going to Kew Gardens today, which means it's going to rain when we're at Kew Gardens.
So. Well, you do know that we're in England, so it's always sunglasses and umbrella.
True.
The combo.
True.
You know, it's, you know, you can never fully trust that sunny day.
Yeah.
You know, those black clouds could roll in any minute and shit on everything. So I had a nice day yesterday. I went and hung out with Hat Films in their warehouse, which I did. So this is the second time I visited. And we did some weird, fun, painty challenges. It was nice. It's like I've suddenly got this little extra group of friends who are very... they're very rude. I don't know. It's like my mum wouldn't approve of them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're like, oh, you're not going to go and play with those Hat Films boys again, are you? And I'm like, please, mum, I want to go and play with Hat Films. And they're like, no, they're a bad influence. You come back from Hat Films and you're all sweary. You're talking about, you're making risque jokes. You know?
Yeah.
Do you remember at school there was always a group of kids who seemed to be much more mature? Not just cool. But they seemed to realize that everything else that was happening at school was boring and for idiots. And so they just sort of met up and had their own cool things going on the sly. There was a group of guys like that at my school, and they just didn't get involved in anything. They always seemed to be doing some extracurricular thing of their own, like they had a band or they had some group that would meet up and everything. And, you know, they were just very cool. All the parties they talked about, it was only them that went. They knew loads of girls. And I was just like, damn, I want to get in with those guys. Like, they seem cool. But I was happy with my D&D nerd friends.
Right.
No, well, I am too. But I also, though, I felt a bit like a square. I felt like my mum had given me a packed lunch and stuff and sent me off to sort of make friends, in a sense, as well. Because I brought with me... After last week, I brought with me a list of the things that I noticed that they didn't have. So I stole a bunch of stuff from the office. I ordered some stuff on Amazon. So it was like bin bags, kitchen roll, wet wipes. I bought like a respirator. I bought just loads of cleaning supplies.
Right.
I also bought them a dartboard as like a gift, I guess. Because I felt like they could put a dartboard on the wall, which they liked. So that was a nice gift.
Yeah.
And I think they actually preferred the bin bags more. The thing about it is it's kind of a bit of a boys' club, that the Hat Films warehouse. It's a bit smelly. It's a bit, like, kind of grimy and really dirty. And there's, like, just wood shavings and bin bags full of shit everywhere. They actually liked the bin bags the most. And we filled up, like, three bin bags full of stuff. The thing is, like, it had this kind of... sour milk, like some horrible rotten food smell coming from somewhere.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
And we didn't really know where it was coming from. Al Smithy kept smelling it the whole day, and he was like, "Is that bin bag there?" And I was like, "I don't think it is, because like I've been smelling that bin bag, and I don't think that's where the smell's coming from anyway." We didn't really make that much of an effort to locate the smell or really think that much about it. But later on in the day, Al Smithy was complaining about it again. And he took a big gulp of his coffee and was like, because it was one of those sealed like Starbucks cups.
Right.
And he realized he'd just picked up one of them off of the middle table, and that was obviously one that had been sat there for about 6 months.
God.
This latte that had slowly turned to cheese.
He could have got very ill.
In fact be ill right now as we're speaking.
The thing is, he took a big swig of it, thinking, and then knew something was wrong because it was obviously like stone cold. But obviously, also the other thing was, he going through his mind is, this must be paint water. And the other thing is, he didn't want to just spit it and spray it everywhere. He wanted to spit it into something else.
Oh,
right?
I would have spat that.
It's
right
hard
on
to
the
spit
floor.
It back into those Starbucks cups through that little hole. So he's like running to the bathroom with this mouth full of fetid.
That's disgusting.
Like, cheese.
That is so disgusting. But the thing is,
it smelled so rancid, like through the whole day. We all knew what that smells. Because he was so confident it was from the bin, that the trap coffee cup lying in that, those coffee cups with the lids on, you never know what's inside them. I don't really drink out of cans anymore, because when I was like a student, I used to drink a lot of Coke cans, you know, and I remember the same thing happened to me. You know, I left this, like, I'd obviously left an old Coke can somewhere for ages. God knows how long. Yeah. It's probably full of spider webs and, like, yeah, I don't know, God, mold, what grows on a Coke. Probably nothing. It's probably just normal Coke, actually. It probably wasn't a problem. But, you know, you get in your mind the idea of what could have grown in that Coke can. Like, how disgusting could it have gotten in there? And then I just took a big old gulp of it. I like to see what I'm drinking.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times you don't look down. Like, I was taking a picture of my cider the other day at the pub, and as I took a picture, like,
what a world we live in, eh? I was taking a picture of my cider at the pub.
I almost missed that sentence. It was so banal.
Jesus Christ. The fuck are you, like, 15 years old? Why are you taking a picture of your cider at a pub?
Well, you know.
We're calling him the midlife crisis guy. We're like, take a photo of your food.
Way to communicate. I don't send emojis. I just send, like, pictures of my surroundings.
Right.
You know? That's the easiest way to do it.
Because it's so fascinating to see a picture of a cider.
Well, yeah. my mum sends me pictures of what she's up to all the time. You know, going to a garden centre and hanging out with my dad in the garden, you know, garden related usually, but it's nice. It's interesting.
We were talking about video games just before you got back and we started the podcast.
No, wait, hang on a sec, though. What were you taking? You were taking a picture of your cider and then what? Sorry, where was this leading?
A bird shit in my cider. Right at that moment.
I'm glad that
he's a critic. He is a critic. Good stuff.
Yeah, he hated me as well.
Me,
he thought.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Great.
Oh, God.
So, I have been recommended a game. This is on my Steam store.
Right.
Along with some other ones. I've got, let me see what I've got. This is on my list of new releases. There's Necromunda Hired Gun, which looks it's a first-person shooter vaguely in the Warhammer universe or 40K universe, and it's kind of shooty and all that kind of stuff. There's a game called Solasta Crown of the Magister, which looks like a sort of D&D-ish RPG, which doesn't look too bad. There's a few other things. And then Love Stories, Sex and the Furry Titty. That's the name of the game.
Is this on
Steam?
This
is on Steam, and the picture that pops up is of a dude getting a tit job from a fox woman, and he's jizzing all over her tits. Now, it says this game is marked adult only. You're seeing this game because you've set your preferences to allow this content, because there are a lot of games that are adult only that are not pornography.
Yeah, just straight up porn, yeah.
This is revolting. Why am I looking at this, Steam? Why am I looking at this? I don't want to
see
this.
Well, it's because you've bought previous titles.
I have never.
Yeah. And you put them into the secret,
the
secret games list that nobody else can see.
This is an absolute lie. Do you know what it might be? Some comedian gifted me one of these games about seven years ago.
You're right. It's number one on the new and trending. I'm seeing it as well.
It's disgusting. Wait, it should not exist.
Hang on. I've got to check this. Hang
but
on.
This stuff sells, man. Like, sex has always sold ever since Roman times.
This isn't
when
they
sex. Had the dicks on the paving slabs.
This isn't
Pompeii
sex.
And stuff.
This is cartoons
pointing the way to the brothels.
And bestiality combined.
What's this one called?
Love Stories, Sex and the Furry Titty.
I don't have that on my top seller, actually.
I heard a theory this week that it was that chick from Goof Troop that made everyone into furries, right? It seeded
yeah, you're
that
right.
Furry.
I think you're right, actually.
What's Goof Troop?
You've never seen Goof Troop?
No.
I'm forward to the Goof Troop.
Let's have a look.
Yeah.
Goof Troop. Oh, it's got Goofy
What's
in it.
What's her name? Roxanne.
Goof Troop is a, there was like a cartoon television series that starred Goofy. And somehow somebody had decided to have children with Goofy because he has a son named Max in it. And his neighbor is like a, what's his neighbor like? It's like a Keeping Up with the Joneses kind of guy. He's like a grumpy middle-aged guy, but he has like the big RV and he's got the nice pool and everything. And his son is friends with Goofy's son, and they're called the Goof Troop, and they just do everything together.
He's a single father.
They go on wild adventures, like camping.
Goofy had a kid, and Mrs. whoever he humped fucked off and left him with the kid.
That story is not mentioned at all.
No,
it says here the series focuses on the relationship between single father Goofy and his son Max.
Yeah, yeah. This was made in the 90s, so it was kind of relevant at the time. Like, divorce rates were definitely higher than they'd ever been. You know, single moms and single dads were a lot more common than they'd been, especially like in the middle classes, I guess, which is what Goofy and Max and his neighbor seem to be, like middle, upper middle class, yeah.
And this is the sad part. A large portion of the show's humor comes from Max's relatively normal personality, sharply contrasting with his father. Because if your dad is Goofy,
yeah,
and you're relatively normal, that's like having a dad who's just like, his brain was fried. Like he did so much acid back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Now he's a single father.
Yeah.
And Goofy's just like, oh, dude, Max.
Why, Max?
Tripping over stuff. And he's like, Dad, please just sit down.
Fuck it up again, Max.
I've got friends coming over. Dad, could you please go upstairs?
Oh, go upstairs, Max. Whoa.
And just hear him crashing around up there. Yeah. That's just my dad. Was he drunk? No, he's just crazy.
That's a good take, Lewis. The girl from Goof Troop. It's got to be. That's got to be the one of the contributors to the whole movement, right?
I'm going to look up on Wikipedia what it says about furry fandom.
We accidentally furried up a bunch of people, and ever since it's just gotten worse, right?
In 1976, a pair of cartoonists created the amateur press association Vooty, which was dedicated to animal-focused art. Many of its featured works contained adult themes, such as Omaha the Cat Dancer, which contained explicit sex.
Right.
So this sort of built up from there. According to a fandom historian, Fred Patton, the concept of furry originated at a science fiction convention in 1980. I feel like, you know, although I'm a big fan of Robert Crumb, he has quite a lot of anthropomorphic stuff in his work.
Right.
Fritz the Cat was a prime example of that.
Yes.
That happened in the 70s, and I wonder if that was also a part of
it. What was the movie about Crumb?
It was called Crumb.
Oh, it was actually called Crumb. What was other one that I keep getting confused with thinking that it was about Crumb? It was the one...
American Splendor?
Maybe it's that. And then there's that other one that had it was like Nicolas Cage was in it or something. It was called I can't remember.
About Robert Crumb.
No, it wasn't about Crumb, but I always think that it is. I always get like the whole sort of, there's like three or four movies and like two of them are to do with Crumb and then two of them are not, but like I always assume that I always get them mixed up for some reason. I don't know why. It's so, like they came out like early 2000s or something, and I always get them all mixed up.
Well, American Splendor came out 2003.
Yeah.
And that had Paul Giamatti in.
Right,
And that was, I mean, I was a fan of the American Splendor comics before that, I must say.
Nice, nice.
They're obviously influenced by... Well, it's weird, actually. It's like Harvey Pekar is not a very interesting figure in terms of his life. He collects old jazz records. He works as like, what does he do? He works in a hospital as basically like an administrator. He does all lots of filing and stuff.
Right.
He's generally pretty miserable. And he does a lot of comic book stuff where he has a story and he meets a lot of comic book artists and gets them to write a story. Robert Crumb's done some for him. Loads of stuff. People have done stuff for him.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Paul Giamatti does a good job of playing Harvey Pekar, and Harvey Pekar appears in the film. So it's kind of weird. But yeah, it's a strange thing, American Splendor. It's very, very strange. But yeah, that whole like Robert Crumb and Harvey Peaker and all those guys, that sort of alternative comic scene. I was a big fan of all that.
Yeah.
But the Robert Crumb movie is excellent. His brothers were even crazier than he was, because he's a deeply, deeply weird guy.
Yeah, wasn't he? Didn't he do like lots of like he had like a drawing style, like he would draw females, but they would always have like there's quintessential sort of elements to each of his drawings. Like
he
they
liked
always
big women. Yeah,
they were
yeah,
always big or and but like. Yeah, I don't know. It was I can't remember all of it.
He drew like I've got a ton of his stuff, and the artwork in. I mean, he's a brilliant artist. He really is.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in Crumb where he's teaching his son, and they're drawing the same woman. They've got a picture of a woman. This is from like the Wild West sort of era, the frontier era, and she'd been arrested for something, you know, and they had her mugshot and everything, or something like that. It was some picture like that, and his son has done a brilliant, brilliant drawing. But Robert Crumb has captured something else about her that means that his is slightly better. Like there's some essence to what he's drawn that really captures her expression and her attitude and stuff like that. And his son is a brilliant artist, but isn't quite there. And there's something about Robert Crumb's art style that is unique and brilliant. So he did loads of stuff. And he was his comics were really, really filthy. And he had his ideal woman was very tall, had very powerful thighs, big powerful butt and huge boobs, and he seemed to like quite long hair as well. And he talks about how this stems from he when he was a kid, he had an aunt who had very big thigh high boots, and he would cling to them, like he would sit across them, like you sort of mounting her boots while she was wearing them, and that was a big kink for him.
Right.
But in the comics, the thing is, he's not being dominated by these women. He wants to dominate these big women, I think. That's his thing.
Right.
Because there's all kinds of weird comics. It is. Well, he manages it in the comics.
Well, yeah.
I saw a talk with him in London. Me and my mate went to see him. This was about 10 years ago. And Steve Bell, the Guardian cartoonist, was interviewing him. And he was very nervous. He obviously doesn't like talking in front of a room full of people. Steve Bell's questions were not the best. And at the end, when it had finished, he just goes, "We done? All right, cool." And he tries to jump off the stage, but there was like a little sort of barrier around. So he sort of vaulted over this barrier, almost fell off the stage, made a bit of a tit of himself, and then just ran backstage. That was the end of Robert Crumb. Like that was the end of the show. It was really
God.
Weird.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Some people are a bit sort of chaotic like that, right? Like they just, like you can sense how nervous they are, and then everything just seems to socially go wrong for them. Like,
oh man,
like it escalates, goes wrong. And I mean, I don't know if like I've ever had anything like that happen to me, where like I've been so nervous or so keen to get out of somewhere that I've tripped over something and then had to run away because I was so embarrassed and stuff. It's like,
Oh, I feel like that happens to me quite often. I don't know. I feel like it is part of he's a kind of weird guy. He's done these like kind of underground weird comics for a long time, about very weird stuff. And you have to kind of be a bit weird to have that viewpoint, or at least be able to express that viewpoint confidently.
Yeah.
And succinctly as well, in like these very small, it's very short form comics. You know, it's almost like the whole joke is there in a single frame often.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. It's quite a lot of, you know, a picture paints 1,000 words, you know, that's what they say.
Yeah.
And a chart paints 1,000 pictures.
Yeah.
Which is even better.
This is just rambling at this point.
Man,
a quick correction for last week. We said that that Zack Snyder directed Punch Drunk Love, and of course it was Sucker Punch, not Punch Drunk Love. I misspoke.
Oh, right.
Thank you for the many corrections.
Yeah.
It was a simple mistake. But yes, please do continue with the corrections. I love it when the only comment on an hour-long podcast is actually. But that's the internet.
Well, no, it's good. We don't check.
It's good to be corrected. It's good. It's good to.
We just all accept.
It's good to accept that we got
moved
on. We don't often, but we did get something wrong, and we've admitted to it, and we've said sorry, and now we're ready to move on.
I think we should do a public apology of some kind. Some kind of quite long letter. I would like to apologize.
Just go for it now.
Unreservedly to
stand
anybody.
Up on your.
All right, let me just stand up. Hold on. Okay. I would like to apologize on behalf of the Triforce podcast, and especially myself, for misstating that the film Punch Drunk Love was directed by Zack Snyder. I was thinking of the film Sucker Punch, but this is inexcusable. And whilst it could clearly be written off as a slip of the tongue, the fact is, errors like that on a podcast of this importance need to be corrected at the time.
Yeah.
It's only a shame that we do not have a fact-checking team on hand to correct us on the fly. This is something we're looking at to improve the veracity of the claims we make on the podcast. I would like to extend an apology once again on behalf of myself, Sips, and Lewis for misspeaking on
the previous episode. That's me.
Thank you for so eloquently covering my ass, Flax.
Okay, are we done? Do I just walk off the stage at this?
I'm just going to jump over this barricade. Whoops.
What are you singing while you do it? That would be a good exit. If you went and then jumped off the stage, fell over and kept singing it while you ran backstage, I'd like to see that.
Oh, man. Hell. I've been browsing the Steam Queues video games again, and I've come across a couple of pornographic titles, which again I'm not like thrilled about. But one thing that always surprises me about browsing through Steam queues is that it's kind of like going to a flea market or like a garage sale, right? You're rummaging through title after title after title, and sometimes you just find some gold, right? Like when you're not expecting it. But
it's true.
For every one game, there's got to be 1,000 terrible ones on Steam.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them, I'm always left thinking to myself, who bothered to do this? Like, why did they come up with this mediocre idea? Why did they decide to pour time, effort, and probably money into this mediocre idea? It looks like shit. Like, it doesn't seem at all interesting. Oftentimes, it seems to just be trying to, like, cash in on some trend or whatever. Or sometimes too late, sometimes a game comes up 5 years after that trend has expired or whatever, and you can tell that they just thought it's time to get in on this one, but then they're too late, sort of thing. Mm. It's like a minefield. It's crazy. It is. It blows my mind every time. I just feel like a lot of these things, like if a lot of these people just got together and actually made something decent, it would be better than just lots of little shitty games, you know?
I wonder if part of it is, if you look at like Phasmophobia, for example, which I played the other day for the first time, it gave me terrible nightmares. It was actually quite fun.
Yeah.
Now that was a game that was really popular with streamers for a while, sold a ton of copies.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people over the last few years have realized that it doesn't matter if your game is a bit scuffed and crappy. If it's got a core mechanic that's funny or enjoyable, or especially multiplayer, bash it out there. You never know. I mean, you know, fucking some big streamer might pick it up. Suddenly you've sold 1 million copies.
Yeah.
Everybody's playing it. Fall Guys and Among Us and games like that. Among Us was around for years, and then it suddenly became huge.
Yeah.
And now it's like one of the most ubiquitous things. My daughter got an Among Us birthday card, like I said. Like, it's everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
It's everywhere. It's a huge game.
It got into the mainstream for sure. Like, my son's school, because you can play it on mobile and stuff. So all these kids are playing it because I think in a lot of cases they see their older siblings playing it and they think that this is the thing to play or whatever. Because kids will just play anything. You put them in front of any game and they will play it. Like, I mean, I was the same, like, when I was a kid, you know, like, if I got a game for Christmas, that's what I would play, you know, even if it was, like, Kid Icarus, you know, they were sold out of Final Fantasy and I just got, like, Kid Icarus or something, I'd play it, like,
Super Star Wars on the SNES, that was a game I loved, the Super Star Wars, they were legit.
Yeah.
Any Super Star Wars fans in chat? I'm sure there are.
They were great games, actually. Those were really fun. But, it's a weird one. Yeah, but like Among Us, like with some of these games, their loops are different, right? Like if they're multiplayer games or competitive games or whatever, like the loops are kind of, they speak for themselves sort of thing. But like, I've been playing a couple of weird games recently. Like I played Power Wash Sim, which was...
Yeah, so I've seen your stream announcements and I've been thinking, what the hell is that game? And I look and I think, yes, that's a Sips game.
Yeah, but, well, so Power Wash Sim is actually pretty good. And one of those games, it's like a painting puzzle, but, you know, it's very satisfying at the same time. And it was just kind of chill and enjoyable or whatever. And, you know, surprisingly, because it just sounded so dumb, you know, it was one of those games where it was like, oh, yeah, here we go. Like, it's just a dumb sim. Like, I'll play it for a bit, see what it's like kind of thing. And then ended up finishing the whole thing, which was pretty good. And then more recently, I've been playing Weed Shop 3, which is...
Weed
Shop 3, yeah. You have to grow weed and sell weed to a variety of customers, and you can sell them bongs and stuff, and it's... It's a bit like crude in places and stuff, but again, it's like, I don't know, it's just got these like these half decent sort of gaming loops that kind of keep you, you know, you have to grow stuff, you have to buy supplies, grow stuff, and then sell it to customers, and you make profit, and you slowly upgrade your shop, and it turns into a better shop, and you get different customers and stuff, and it's all like fairly satisfying. It's a bit grindy or whatever, but it's fine. But it's again, it's so simple. Like it's such a simple sort of concept for a game. And again, I don't know how so many of these games on Steam can't do it. Like they get it wrong. Like their simple ideas for a game loop or concept or whatever just seem so bad. I don't know. Like it's just crazy. It baffles me.
Before we carry on, this week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN.
Shut up. Are you serious?
We love ExpressVPN. You've heard me talk about it before. Yeah. We use ExpressVPN as our VPN of choice because it doesn't log your activity online. Lots of cheap or free VPNs will do that. They'll make money by selling your data to advertisers. If something's free, it's not really free.
So what if Mrs. F logs my internet activity and sells it to advertisers? Could I skirt around that using a VPN?
God help us all.
You want to use, well, you want to keep her browsing safe as well, because you don't want to know.
What if you found out that she was like, that she was looking up like horse fisting or something like that? Would you?
Blimey, that would be quite the conversation over dinner,
ExpressVPN uses Lightway, which is a protocol to make speeds faster than ever. I've never noticed any slowdowns. And the third thing is it's very easy to use. You don't need any technical know-how. You can set it up on your phone, on your iPad, on your computer, on your TV, with just a single app. Very easy. Don't need any technical know-how. Your grandparents could do it if they wanted.
Boom.
So there you go. Please protect yourself with the VPN that we use here at the Triforce podcast. You could use the link expressvpn.com/triforce today and get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/triforce. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
At the other end of the spectrum is the copy of a game that's been just the same game again. Like I've played Days Gone this week on Steam. I've put like 40 hours in, so I've played it a fair bit. That's a lot for me these days. And it's basically this third person action adventure in the vein of every game on the PlayStation since 2000. Yeah. You know, it all feels like, you know, it's the same. You walk around in third person, you shoot zombies. Yeah. It's like The Last of Us or Uncharted, or it felt to me like a bit like a bad version of Death Stranding in a sense, because it's kind of, you're driving around delivering stuff to people,
right?
You know, kind of in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. Not really. I'm sort of hunting bounties mostly, it's the same mechanic. It's go the here, kill someone, get the thing, take it to somebody else, kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, I honestly, a lot of the time, felt like I just wanted to play Death Stranding again. It's like, if you like Sons, do you like Sons of Anarchy, the kind of biker-y?
Not really.
Universe?
The aesthetic is not like for me, really. Like I could tolerate it if there's a good story or whatever, but it's not like, it's not enough to sell to me, like just based on that, if you know what I mean.
No. Well, in that case, this is very tolerable. I'd say this game's fairly tolerable. Other people might disagree, but I felt like it has got a good story, but you have to trek through a lot of fairly repetitive, tedious gameplay to get there.
Yeah.
But I actually sort of didn't mind that repetitive gameplay. I wanted to shoot some zombies in the head with various guns and hit them with spiky baseball bats and stuff like this. I just felt like I was in the mood for smacking some zombies after watching Army of the Dead last week. And I honestly enjoyed this game more than that movie.
Huh.
So yeah, like the story kind of, it's not, it's predictable and obvious and like kind of, I don't know, very tropey, very standard. And then it does sort of take an odd narrative choice in the game. Because it feels like it's going to be one thing. Like, oh, you know, it'll turn into some Subnautica-y lab stuff suddenly.
Yeah.
And you know, then you'll be doing this thing when you'll discover all this stuff. But no, it kind of just stays mostly in the wilderness. People are struggling to survive. I wouldn't not recommend it. I think initially I was bored by it. But it just sort of kept going. Yeah. I thought the game was about to end, and then it was like, oh no, here's this whole new region where you're doing all the same stuff you're doing, but
there's a funny balancing
region
in a game though, right? Like sometimes if I'm playing a really good game and I'm getting into it at the start, like in my mind I'm thinking, oh, it's almost over, I can't believe like this game is so short, you know, but like you're in reality you're nowhere close to finishing it, sort of thing, but you're like, oh, I hope it doesn't just end here, like I hope this isn't the end, sort of thing. And then, but you can quickly get to a point where you're like, okay, it hasn't ended yet and it's going to keep going. Oh, it's going on too long now. You're just like, oh, please end for Christ's sake. Like I've played enough of this game. Like I
oh
find
my God,
that there's,
that's exactly what it
was
like.
There's definitely points in games, right? Where like they can get it wrong. Like the length of the game.
I would say Kingdom Come was a prime example of that for me, in that I very rarely finish a game because I just get bored of them, especially single player games. Yeah. Like I eventually get into like, there's that intro period and then you get into a good bit and then it's like the story is playing out, but it takes so long. And Kingdom Come, the ending of that felt like it was really fucking dragging. Whereas I feel like the ending of, say, The Witcher 3, which I come back to as like one of my favorite games, was really hype. And I thought the story built up really well and it was just the places you went to were really interesting and exciting. And then the final battle was really cool and everything. And it was like,
yeah,
it was a hype game. And then it was over and you were like, oh, phew, the credits roll and you feel good. But some games, like you said, they don't quite know how to end it.
Yeah.
Or they make you do some, like, you know, the ending's nearly here, but they're going to make you go and find 10 things out there and you've got to ride all over the world again and collect these things. You're like, fuck me. Come on, dude. Just do it. Just end the game. I think a lot of the time they know, shit, we said it was going to be 60 hours. It's only 58. Let's stick another couple of hours away.
Yeah, let's make them go out and just collect one more bundle of bear noses before we finish this one off. Like some of those mechanics just feel so, like, they've always felt a bit dated, but especially now, it's just they keep relying on them and you just think, come on, like, let's get something new.
Did you feel that way in Mass Effect 2? Which I think... I played Mass Effect 1 after I played 2.
I finished that game
2.
Twice. I think Mass Effect 2 is the only game that I finished and then immediately restarted and played through again.
It's such a good game.
It's a great game. But I don't remember ever really feeling overly bummed out by any parts of it. But
no.
It's such a long time ago now as well, so I don't really remember.
Because, I mean, Mass Effect 1 had a lot more grind to it than Mass Effect 2. I never played 3 because the reviews were so bad at the time. But Mass Effect, like, 2 was when I started playing Mass Effect 2. And then people were like, you should play the first one because, you know, it feeds into the second one. I was like, oh. So I went and started 1. I was like, man, this is a pain because there's a lot of, like, driving around.
There's that part of the game where you have to do the surveys of the planets and drive with the truck
tedious.
And all that. Yeah.
But it's still essentially you're shooting stuff and it looks cool and everything.
Does,
so I didn't
mind.
But that was a good game. They got the balance right there, I think, between the story, because if the story starts to accelerate, like, this is what I didn't like about Death Stranding. I know you guys loved it. They waited all the story stuff at the start before they let you get on with playing the fucking game. I feel like you need to be playing the game and get absorbed by minor things, and then gradually the plot grows bigger and bigger.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not saying Death Stranding's
perfect. I'm not saying it's
perfect.
A perfect game.
It's got, like, it's fucking, it's a mess. It's a mess in a lot of places, for sure. Like, sometimes you have, like, these 20, 30-hour stretches where you're just hiking around, and it's like, it does feel like multiple different games in one, you know? But overall, you know, it was such a, I don't know, it just worked, like, as a fun thing. In a sense, like, weirdly, I don't think it was supposed to work as well as it did with the bit of the story. Because once the story was over, I was like, oh man, I don't want any more story for now. I'm kind of done. I'm just going to play the game for a bit. And then I can have another hour of story now. And then, like, another bit of 6 hours of game.
You sort of earned it by
I don't know,
having fun.
It's
for
weird.
A bit.
Oh man, I wish, I keep saying this, but I wish that they would, like, after you're done the story, and maybe they would need to add, like, some DLC or something for it, but I would love it if it would just open into, like, a kind of, like, you know, you fix the world a little bit in the game, like, with leading up to the story, but, like, if it opened up a little bit more into a sandbox where you actually fixed more of the world and just kept doing the deliveries, building stuff up, You know, little side things could come up or whatever, but really the focus was just like creating good logistics routes and doing deliveries and like building up some of these like hubs and stuff would have actually been pretty fun. And I probably would have played the game a lot more.
I really liked the mechanics.
Yeah. It felt good to load up a lot of, you know, parcels and shit onto your back. It was great getting the upgrades that made it so you could carry more. The trucks and stuff were kind of cool. Like, I think the fighting could have just been sacked off entirely, you know, like the random sort of what were
fighty
they called?
Bits. Yeah, I did so little fighting.
I know,
the
it just felt like such a.
Game.
It just well, felt
I did,
like
I did so little that when I had to do it, I had to do it for the quest or whatever for the main story. I didn't know what any of the fucking things did. Yeah. I don't think I used a single like piss grenade or poop grenade or whatever.
Are there poop grenades?
Nah.
Yeah.
It was just like all bio stuff, right? It's pee and blood, isn't it? I think it's some of your blood.
Jesus.
Yeah, because your character is like the part of some weird guy. And so as a result, his biomatter like affects these monsters. So you can scare them away with your own blood and
they
stuff.
Go, it's
so
you have pee, like and they run away.
Yeah.
Pretty scary monsters.
That's not why they're scared. It's cool, man. Death Stranding's fucking great game.
It is, I agree with Lewis though. In parts, it is a fucking mess. Like it's just
For sure.
But
I think Days Gone too. Like it's a shitty mess in places. Like there's the open world is not open. You know, you drive out into the world because I drove out on the bike and I was like, oh man, this is really cool. I'm gonna just randomly explore parts. I think it's and I think I'll discover hubs and I'll discover things. No, it's just shitty shacks with a couple of zombies in and nothing to even loot, no story, nothing to pick up, no collectibles. Like kind of there are some in the game. But you know, it's mostly this very sad, empty world. And it feels like at the very late in development, they shoehorned in these question marks that appear. So when you're driving down the road, a question mark appears on the minimap. You drive towards it, and it's like a guy trapped in a car with like two zombies outside. You kill the zombies. And he has this incredibly, it's like Morrowind level fucking conversation with you at the end,
right,
where the worst voice acted guy goes, oh, thank you for saving me from blah, blah, blah. The zombies were going to kill me.
So when it's like that,
please let me skip this garbage.
But do you reckon like, that what's happened is they spent so much time on the main game that now when they're like, oh, fuck, we got to do all of those side quests, they're like, oh, fine, just do whatever, and they just bosh him in. And one of the developers is like, oh, I'll do the voice for this one. We can't be bothered to wait around for the voice actor again. So that's why it's shit, because bad voice acting in a game sticks out a fucking mile. Like, it really does.
It's
shocking.
It's really weird as well how, like, I mean, the game is like, it's got like four areas basically, and the three areas that you start with and you think are the only areas, right, until sort of you follow the story all the way down and it gets this whole extra bit. And it's like, damn, you don't realize when you're playing a game how much content there's going to be. You know, these days you buy a game, you don't know whether it's going to be 7 hours or 14 hours or 45 hours. You know, I played this game for 40 hours and I just opened up this brand new fucking zone. And I'm like, Christ, you know, I suppose it's good value for money. And I don't know who from above decides that this needs to be in there. Or whatever, or like I'm happy. It's not I'm not angry that my game has content, but I'm it's kind of just it's not it's just I you just I'm just wondering, because you don't know when you buy a game like what almost like what's going to be in there anymore, unless you check sort of Steam beforehand and they're like, yeah, this game's 7 hours but overwhelmingly positive, it's worth playing, and it's like, you know, still 25 quid. You're like, I don't know. Oh, I'm just not sure.
It's a weird one. I've been, like I said, I've been playing a lot of like weird stuff lately, which I've actually enjoyed.
How long is Subnautica? Have you finished Subnautica?
Yeah,
now?
I finished the new one in about, I think it was 18 hours. So it's
yeah. See, that's what
short.
I would have expected. That's the sort of the. I feel like that's like a pretty standard length these days for like that type of game as well.
Well,
right?
The nice thing with that game though is that there's like a sandboxy element to it where you could really increase that time if you wanted to spend a lot of time building your base, collecting resources, you know, exploring.
Because there's all that sort
of
cosmetic stuff, isn't there? There's loads of cosmetic stuff for the base. Like, you can build a huge base if you wanted.
Yeah, you can for sure. Yeah. So that adds a lot of life to the game and probably a little bit of replayability as well. But the story is very sort of like, once you've done it, like, I don't know if you'd really bother to do it again. I don't think there's a lot locked behind the story either. Like, you have to go to different areas to get blueprints for stuff, but that doesn't rely on you actually completing any story, you know what I mean? You can just go and do that whenever.
I finished the first one. I started playing two, but it made me seasick. Like, it gave me a really bad headache playing it.
Oh, right.
I've tried messing with the FOVs and stuff like that. I haven't actually gone back to it. Because it messed with my brain so bad, I couldn't...
You get that a couple times. Yeah,
I had to stop. Like, and I didn't want to go back, because I know that if I play it again, that's the day written off, because I'll feel like shit again all day, which is fucking weak.
Fuck.
But... I found with the first one that the best part of the game was when I was just surprised that the second one was so similar. Like, I was like, I understand they're making a sequel to a successful game.
Yeah.
But what made the first one great for me was the first time you get your little submersible and you find out that there's these huge areas underneath. Like, you go down this little cave and something opens out, and trying to navigate those. Like, when you take down your big sub and you're going right down through this narrow crevasse, sort of lowering it in, like, that was magic. And the you know, you find these new areas, it's lit up, and then you go out in the prawn suit and everything. And I loved that. I absolutely loved that. Whereas I found with this one, I was like, huh.
Well, you knew all that was going to happen again.
Yeah,
but you'd already experienced
issue.
It. Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
it was
they can
so
never recreate
similar.
That. I mean, the game takes place on the same planet. It's all the same timeline, technology, and stuff like that. You know, it's just... it's just a continuation of the first game, really. So you do lose a lot of that initial magic. I mean,
magic is so cool. Like, when you get like this, you do experience it sometimes in like in No Man's Sky and in various other things where you get on.
I gotta say, I never
reveal,
experienced
you know?
Much magic in No Man's Sky, and I'm not even saying that as like, oh yeah, everybody didn't like that game, so I also don't like it. I've tried like three times to like that game, and it's just
it looks like it's your kind of thing. That's the weird thing.
I know,
to me.
It's odd, but the aesthetics are just so displeasing to me. Like, I hate how everything looks in the game. I hate that the space stations are just these big cubes,
right?
And stuff like, I don't know. There's just so many things that are off-putting about it to me, and it's just impossible for me to get into it. Like, every time I've tried, I just find it so tedious. Like, I just can't get into it. I don't know. Maybe
maybe you just got burned one too many times.
Maybe, yeah.
By it. I don't know, because it did have a very shaky start. And but no, I came back to it relatively recently, and I was very impressed. And I think most games have that, right? There's this moment where you're like, damn, this is a cool place where I am. And yeah, it's nice to hold on to those. I do want to still check out Subnautica.
Yeah, and it's worth it. Yeah. Honestly, it is good. I enjoyed it. Like, I probably went through it a bit too quickly. Like, I probably could have done a bit more exploring and stuff. But I was satisfied. Like, it was pretty good. Like, I didn't dislike it. I don't think it was as good as the first in the sense that, like, what we said. Like, the first one had those moments where... it felt magical. Like, you know, it was so different, right? Like, I'd never played a game where you have to explore the ocean and stuff. Like, it was great.
Yeah.
And the second game does it very well as well. But if you've played the first one, you know, most of the surprises are like, you know, there's not that much different to it.
Yeah.
The same.
Yeah. I mean, it was the same to me. It was a shame, I think, how much by its nature was kind of repetitive, because obviously they can't make a completely different game and call it Subnautica 2, but it really did feel like the same game. And I thought, I've already done this. And the plot of the first one was not what kept me intrigued. Like, the plot was like something I had to do rather than something I was really driven to do. It was okay. I did quite like the ending, but the plot stuff was my least favorite part of the game. So really, to remake the game and say it's the same game but a different plot, I'm like, so the game was the same, but the worst part of the first one for me, the story, the bit that I was just like, come on, get on with it, you know, that was the bit that they changed. So it kind of just felt like it was literally the same game, and the bit I didn't enjoy the first time was the only new bit.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be like that sometimes.
No,
right?
Flame intended. Big fan of Subnautica, but I just... there's not enough there to drag me back, I think, given how much I saw about... Four hours or something like that, and I was like, oh, this is just the same game. So
yeah, it's weird. It's weird, right? There's certain games that universally everybody just thinks that everybody should like.
Yeah,
and then oftentimes, or not, maybe not even oftentimes, but there's definitely been some times where I've come across a game where everybody is praising it, and I feel like I should like it, and everybody's convinced that I will like it, and then I just don't like it. It just doesn't click for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't say that's No Man's Sky, because I think like No Man's Sky has like a healthy raft of people who just don't like it.
There's this game that I've been playing this week called Tainted Grail.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, a lot of people.
It's okay. Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's everybody that drops by the stream says, "Is this basically Slay the Spire?" And I mean, I would like to say the deck building genre is not defined by one game. There are like a million.
No, but that's just such a Twitch chat thing, right? Like I imagine that most people come by your stream and see you playing something that's not Dota and say, "Wow, they changed Dota 2 a lot."
We have a command for that exact.
Wow,
comment.
Dota 2 looks crazy. It's been a while since I last played it. Like
literally every time I stream, someone will drop by and make that joke. You must realize that you're not the first to make that joke because you've heard it somewhere.
Yeah.
You must, like, you didn't invent that.
No.
It must be like a meme in people's
brains. It's a Twitch chat.
It's bizarre.
Thing. They just do it all the time for every game.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it is, obviously, it's a deck builder. So you could say this is basically Slay the Spire, but by that token, Slay the Spire was ripping off some other deck build. Like, no, Slay the Spire was obviously probably the best deck building sort of progression game like that. But this is quite different. It's more like, it's a rogue light, they call it. So you die, but the progress that you've made towards your overall goals, cards you've unlocked, characters you've unlocked and everything, you retain.
Carries through.
So you sort of build up.
So you're supposed to sort of die on the first boss and then you kill the first boss and get enough stuff to get to say. Yeah, so in a sense, like, it's still 60 hours, but it's the way it's built or should be built is that you eventually... Like Hades, like you just
exactly.
It's hard to one shot the game with the starting abilities.
It's impossible, really. Like the cards that you unlock and the things you unlock back in the village, you need to buff up your village that is sort of your hub, if you like. You get new characters to come join it, and then they can give you buffs to take out into the opening worlds. And then when you start to beat the first one every time, but you unlock new characters. And you haven't unlocked the cards yet for them. And some of them are very powerful, so you want to try and play them. So it's like a different place.
What's this called?
Tainted Grail.
Sounds good.
It is good. There is one issue with it, which is the name.
It's a deck building card game?
Tainted
it's so
Grail.
Forgettable. I forgot it instantly.
Tainted Love.
So if you look at... there's this whole fantasy genre that for some reason... has all of these terrible fucking names. Like, I don't know why they all want to come up with something like that. Like, here's one, Andor Wrecking Dawn. That means nothing. Like
Andor. I don't even know how to look that up.
Right. So all of these games, it seems to me, an awful lot of these roguelikes have a name like Splinter Realm, The Reckoning of the Lord of Splinters. And you're like, can you give it a value?
Yes, of course. Yes, the Lord of Splinters. I'm very familiar with him.
Right.
I must check out this game.
I mean, Tainted Grail is an awful name. It doesn't roll off the tongue. It doesn't mean anything. And I've yet to figure out, although I have skipped all the storyline stuff that's popped up, what the hell a Tainted Grail is. Like, I don't even care. It's just a fun little game. But the names are so bad. I just don't get it. Like, it's set in this... Like, you have these candles called Weird Candles, I think. Weird spelled W-Y-R-D, huh? Just to
of
be
course,
actually weird.
Yeah.
So call it Weird Realm or Weird... Weird. There you go. Boom. There's a name for you, rather than Tainted Grail. And that's actually not the full name. It's got a longer name than that. So it's just... I don't know. It always makes me laugh. The names these guys come up with for their games crack me up.
Yeah.
So did I tell you what happened my jab this week?
Hey,
oh, congrats.
Nice. You got
How
it.
Did you feel afterwards?
I had my first jab.
What brand of jab did you have?
So I went up to Clifton, which is the sort of nicest area of Bristol, outside of it in the centre.
And did you have your jab administered to you by like a foppish dandy in his vast
kind
mansion?
Kind of. So the vaccination centre was next to the zoo. And
Don't get those jabs mixed up, Craig.
Yeah.
Clifton Prep School. And it's like the classic old... hall, you know, that you have for these, you know, in these old schools where I seem to remember we sort of had one that we called the old gym,
right.
You know, which is basically a kind of a small, slightly too small for any sort of real sports to be going on in there, you know. It's just a hall that's just about big enough for a badminton court.
The main equipment would be medicine balls. That would be the main piece of equipment.
And some of those big blue mats.
Yes, and ropes. That's it.
Yes, ropes.
Hanging from a
that's
ceiling.
The kind of stuff that was in there. But it was very idiot-proof, the whole thing, right? It was very much kind of, you got there, they've obviously been doing this for months now, vaccinating people, and I assume they've been dealing with, first of all, the oldest people who are...
That is the system.
Anyway, there was a lot of people standing around who didn't need to do anything.
Right,
but
right.
I feel like I still probably did need to do stuff when it was hopeless people. But yeah, it's so idiot-proof. You just sort of blunder in, fill out a form, sit down. Everyone's done it. You know how it's
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just so such a nice setting, this school. had it done it, like, it was like beautiful trees, and like I was just like, what kids are going to school in this
Clifton
place?
Kids. The best
gorgeous.
Kind of kids.
So I walked all the way back home, which it's about a 40-minute walk. So I walked there, walked back, and then my friend was like, "Oh, I'm gonna go to the zoo. Do you want to come?" I was like, "Sure," because it was a nice day. So I walked all the way back to the zoo. Walked around the zoo. By the time I'd walked around the zoo, I was feeling pretty dizzy
right.
and tired because it was a hot day.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so then I walked home and just fell asleep on my sofa and woke up about 10 o'clock at night feeling like shit, of course, because
yeah.
I shouldn't have fallen asleep on my fucking sofa at 5 in the afternoon.
But did you feel poorly the next day?
So yes, the next day I just felt really... Well, I think I just felt fucked up because I had messed up my sleep.
Wait,
pattern,
what jab did you get again? Sorry?
I got the Pfizer jab.
Right, okay. I heard that Pfizer, generally, you feel worse after the second jab. Like,
Interesting.
AstraZeneca, it's like after your first one, you feel kind of shitty.
Because
like
I felt
bad,
headaches real
and stuff.
Bad after the yeah. first one.
I'm just so glad I didn't have COVID, because if the fucking jab knocked me out
oh,
that
man.
Hard, then fucking COVID
I try not
be
to
a
think
nightmare.
About it. It was so bad. It was
yeah,
the,
Flax
it was
actually
so bad.
Did have it. You can get his
yeah,
trip
I know.
Report
I
about
just,
it.
I feel even, Ren, I feel new sympathy for
everyone
you.
That said to me that's had the jab and felt a bit poorly, they were like, I can't imagine what real COVID was like. And I was like, don't. Like, it was really, really fucking awful. And I didn't even have it. Like, I didn't need to be hospitalized and shit like that. There were people that had some really grim treatments. Like, the treatments were fucking rough. Like, pipes up your legs to get reoxygenate your blood and shit like that. And
oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's hard. Yeah.
It's nuts. Serious. I'm due for my second jab pretty soon, actually.
Same.
I thought I was going to hear from them this week, but I haven't. So I might have to chase them. Say, I want my second jab.
For some reason, I thought I would be like, more robust to it. I don't know. In my mind, I was like, I eat healthy. I walk around a bit, you know, yeah. but no, I was not.
No, funnily enough, virus that kind of targets like your respiratory system and stuff doesn't really give much of a shit about all that. It just goes for it, you know? Just says fuck
yeah,
you.
It's true.
It's
So I noticed yesterday when I was with Films that Trot is doing I don't know how long he's doing, but I think he was like a couple of days into fasting,
right?
Wow.
And he had this kind of slightly dazed look about him.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Why is he doing that?
I think it's just like a healthy thing, like
no, it sounds
he
really
does
healthy.
The gym and he looks after himself.
Not eating
no,
food.
Apparently it's,
who thought of that one?
Apparently, it is good for
it's
you.
Like driving like, your it's car around with no gas. It's makes sense.
No, it's like it is apparently it is good for you. It's
no,
the thing
sounds,
that humans have.
Yeah.
Sounds
it's
awful.
Almost like paleo kind of thinking. You know, as when you were a caveman, you didn't necessarily have food every day.
That was when we didn't have anything. We hadn't discovered writing or the wheel. And everyone's harking back to this era when we lived hand to mouth. Like, if we saw food, we ate it because it might be 2 days. This wasn't, people weren't happy.
Average life expectancy was like 5 years back then.
I know.
We need to go back. Boris should come out. I think we should wind back society to the days of caves. If you see someone and you don't like them, you may hit them on the head with a rock. That is the future of Britain.
Ugh, be strong, man. Be king now.
Ugh, make fire. Ugh, make fire.
Oh, vote for Ugh. I feel like it's in my mind. 37. I've been eating every day, 3 square meals a day for 37 years.
Yeah.
And when someone tells me, "Oh, your body will be fine," I'm like, "My body's forgotten how to not eat." You know, I don't feel like I can just on a dime. I'm just not confident that my body will be able to keep up.
Yeah.
I was before I'd had the COVID thing, but after that, I'm less confident, and so. I don't know. I think maybe You read about like Wim Hof and people like this taking the ice baths and doing or not like even like David Blaine or whatever not eating for like
40 days was it him, or whatever. Him, yeah,
putting himself in a box and right, not eating for 20 days.
He cheated.
You know,
it's a magic trick. It's a magic trick.
It's not magic. It's like an endurance trick.
Do you not remember the thing where he froze himself in ice? Do you remember that?
I remember that.
He would swap out with a double so he could go and have a fucking lie down and get a burger, and then he'd crawl back in. It's a fucking trick, people.
Oh my god!
I like it. He set that one up near the Millennium Bridge where he was in a glass cage, right? And people would go and say, "Oi, Blaine, you fucking cunt!
They were throwing chips at him and stuff, remember?
Way.
Remember they were throwing chips and stuff at him?
Yeah, don't ever do that kind of thing in the UK. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
We hate people.
Yeah,
we're not going to be supportive.
He was frozen in ice for 66 hours. Yeah. It's fine. It's fine. He was. I mean, these are all endurance things. They're not magic.
Oh, please.
They're endurance.
I felt like I had to endure that whole episode.
Endurance was for the fucking audience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Right, I've got to go to Kew Gardens, lads. I've got to go look at the houses reopened.
Nice. Right, well, there you go.
Enjoy. That sounds fun.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
I'll sniff some flowers on your behalf. Sir.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I've got a big rose just bloomed in my front yard, and I've been sniffing it every day. God damn.
Nice. It's fine.
Well, there you go. You could support us on Patreon and follow us on Spotify where there are new episodes every Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.